Hey, we're back here. It's Downtown Wednesday afternoon. And time for Sports Lit 101 with Bruce Pratt here with us. And we're gonna talk a little California beach situation.
Yeah, when we had David Davis on about 7 years ago, his book Waterman.
Was that 7 years ago?
Yeah. Well, because it was 2 years ago we had him on for Wheels of Courage.
Wow, that's right.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I looked back. I grabbed my copy of Waterman the other day and I looked back to see how often today's subject, George Freeth, was mentioned. And it was all over the place. And I don't think anybody could ever make the case any stronger than Patrick Mocher does in Surf and Rescue, George Freeth and the Birth of California Beach Culture, that without George Freeth, there would have been no Duke Kahanamoku's, who went on to be so famous and so well known as a star of a film and a great athlete. Freeth is a fascinating character because his arc in this world is not a long one, but his effect on any number of things is staggering. Probably the greatest proponent of the surfboard in the history. He was the guy who could surf on Waikiki like nobody else, came to California as a teenager. We're going to get into his backstory a little bit. Got it there and began this peripatetic life of making surfing popular in California. He was born to an interesting parent, to interesting parents. His mother was Hawaiian and English and had connections, not deep blood connections, but connections to the last of the Hawaiian royalty, who, of course, with the annexation of Hawaii by the U.S., their titles and all went away. His dad was an Englishman who had a lot of connections back home in England and never really amounted to what he thought he would be. He was all over the world, Burma, perhaps Sri Lanka, then known as Ceylon, one of those British Empire kind of guys that gets all around. Settles in Honolulu and for a while has a fairly successful business. Then decides he's going to be a guy who's going to make his fortune in guano and gets the rights to an island, some remote island in Hawaii, starts a guano company. It goes well for a while, but it goes bust. And he constantly is looking for the new gig. And George Freeth, his son, grows up with that kind of life, moving around a lot. Eventually, he comes to California for school. He begins this moving back and forth. But he is in Hawaii, the best surfer, the best and fastest swimmer. He is a guy who's winning diving contests. He can do anything in the water. And people that know him, or knew him, I should say, said that they never knew anyone who was more comfortable in the ocean, that this was this guy's habitat. He could do things like, dive down and just for fun and bring a 25 pound weight back to the surface after 2 minutes underwater with it, just holding his own breath. Wow. He could surf literally 10 or 15 miles on a Hawaiian wave, because that which has been done. Kahanamoku did the same thing. But when he came to California, he noticed some differences, and he arrived at a time in the very early 1900s where LA had like 10,000 people and then 40,000 people. And there was no beach culture. But he started giving these exhibitions of fancy diving, of surfing, of swimming, long distance swimming, and would have all these races. And he was also, as we'll find out, the father of life saving. Lifeguarding, if you will, in the biggest sense. And that's his most incredible creation. But he got people in California interested in watching surfing. The problem is the California beaches are very dangerous. They have terrible riptides, and no one was paying any, you just wander out and want to go to the ocean, fine. People were dying sometimes 10, 12 a day in the heat of summer. So as LA got bigger and the beach remained a draw, all these millionaires started building what are called plunges. Now, a plunge was a giant pool. It might have a deck over it, it might not. They might be salt water, they might be fresh water, but there would be places where there'd be hundreds of people, and there would be you know, little dog and pony show things. It might be little tents you could stay in, little thatched cabins, and they became resorts. And they became resorts of the, where there was the fancy hotel where the Jack London stayed and took his surfing lessons from Freeth. Or there were the very middle class, take the trolley out, and the beach made Los Angeles expand to the ocean.
Hmm.
And Redondo and Malibu and Venice and all these towns were nothing till these guys started building boardwalks.
Wow.
And so it, all because it, this that surfing started to catch on. And they would do these exhibitions with Hawaiians. They would draw tens of thousands of people to watch them surf. Then people, of course, wanted to surf. Then they needed to know how to surf. So Freeth began this life, and he was he did not live a long time, of doing all these things, being a surf instructor, being a swimming instructor. He was apparently one of the greatest water polo players of all time. He was a goalie who would score goals because he would dive to the bottom of the pool, swim through everybody, come up, throw the ball in the net, and go back. that he was such an incredibly strong swimmer that, nobody could fight him off. But probably, and we're going to let Pat Mosier, when we talk to him, the author, Patrick Mosier, is going to be on with us on the 20th of July. We're going to let him unpack a lot of that. But Freeth's creating the beach culture was he made the beach safe. He saved over 300 people personally.
Wow.
There was an incident where a number of Japanese fishermen's boats were capsizing in a very bad riptide. He would swim where nobody else could swim through. He's hauling guys in. He gets hypothermia. They get him warm. He goes back out again and rescued people. He finally decided, you know, if we're going to do this, we're going to do it right. So he convinced one of the beaches where he worked to get a three-wheel motorcycle that could go 60 miles an hour. And he invented a device you see, you don't see them so much anymore because there are new ones, but it looked like it was called a torpedo. At each end of the torpedo, there was a line attached to it that was attached to another line that was at the shore. And you could either throw this to somebody, and it was big enough so they could get on it, or these lifeguards that he trained could swim out to a group of people that were in trouble and get them one by one, little by little, get them one by one and bring them all back in. Anybody who's ever been a lifeguard, and I have, will remember that they teach you if two people are struggling and you need to break them apart and take them. They teach you how to do that. They teach you how to break a hold if someone grabs you. What they never teach you how to do is break a hold if both of them grab you. That's not in the book. And it happened to me in North Carolina one time when I was trying to save a little kid whose enormous, out-of-shape father decided he wanted to make the save and nearly drowned all three of us. And I did what they told us to do, and I realized, but then I'm going to knock the kid in the water. But anyway, what Freeth did is he organized these lifeguard things, and he would train them, and there would be no deaths. And then, because he was getting paid $75 a month for this, which was about $1,800 in today's money, they would only hire him for part of the season, the really busy part of the season. And then as soon as the lifeguards were gone, people started drowning again.
Jeez.
People were drowning. And they were in Southern California, and he was in San Francisco, the L.A. area, and eventually at the end in San Diego. One day they lost 13 soldiers. These guys didn't really know how to swim well. They were told, you can't go out there. They didn't know how to go, and they got carried up by the rip current, and it was one guy trying to save them. So he really convinced California that the beach was the big draw, that there was a lot of money in this. But it had to be safe. And if it wasn't safe, that people wouldn't do it. Sadly, he was settled in San Diego near the end of his life, doing pretty well. World War I was coming to a close. He was just, that would have been the last age to be called. He was in his 30s when the armistice was signed. And all kinds of soldiers were sent back to San Diego. And of course, we lost more soldiers to the flu, what they call the Spanish flu, where they brought it back to San Diego. He got it, and the flu didn't kill most of the people. The pneumonia that followed is what killed most of them. And in most ironic and oddest thing, this guy had saved all these lives, catches the flu, has it for 8 weeks, seems to be getting better, gets pneumonia, and drowns in his own lungs.
Wow.
And he was just a remarkable guy. fought racism less than some because he was part white and he had the lighter skin, but he never got taken as seriously as he should. He was a world famous coach of all these different sports. He had fights with the AAU and all their stupid amateur, non-amateur stuff that really took away his ability to earn a lot of money. He never got to be in the Olympics because he was a lifeguard. Therefore, he couldn't be in the Olympics as a swimmer. How that works, I don't know, right? No. But the perniciousness of the AAU in those days, it cannot be overstated. But what I really want Patrick will do is I'm going to talk to him ahead of time, is give us the timeline. What I want to do is just unpack this guy's career, because George Freeth also was involved in Atlantic City in surf demonstrations there and getting lifeguarding and things going there. And what is said by everybody who remembered him in any way said he was just generous. He would do a lot of this stuff for free, but he would work sometimes from 6 a.m. till midnight, teaching, putting on exhibitions, diving, racing against people, all these things. And a guy never made enough money to own his own house. And he was the best at what he did. And Kahanamoku would not have existed without him. Freeth was his mentor, and he says that, talks about it a lot. So it was really a fascinating story, one of the most interesting people I'd never really heard of.
Yeah, excellent that he's finally getting his due. And the name of the book is Surf and Rescue.
Surf and Rescue, George Freeth, that's Freeth, and the Birth of California Beach Culture from the University of Illinois Press, by Patrick Mosier, and we will, as I said, we'll be talking to Patrick next month.
That's fantastic. Looking forward to reading the book and looking forward to having Patrick on here with us as well on Sports Lit 101. What's next week?
Next week, I'm thinking we're going to talk to Scott Palmieri if we can work it out. If not, I'll have something else. Scott wrote a wonderful piece about being a baseball player at Providence College some time back. He is he's head of the English department at Johnson & Wales. He's a great fiction writer. He's written a lot of stuff about his time in the Wooden Bat Leagues, which is fiction. It's really good, and I hope he'll get a book deal for that soon.